We're talking about carbon credits today here at the Soil and Health Field Day, and lucky me, I get two guys to talk about it. I got Caleb and Ross, and you guys had a pretty good session here and some pretty interesting questions. And I think, Caleb, that's one of the things is that we're really in a period of learning at this point because there's so much confusing information, number one, but number two, we're at the very beginning of the learning curve on this thing about carbon credits.
Absolutely, and there's just so much information out there, and it's so hard to synthesize it and figure out what's true and what's relevant. You know, we spend so much of our time just educating growers on how this market works and all the nuances of this market. You know, it's really dissimilar to a lot of other markets because what we're offering here is not a tangible item. It's we're offering carbon credit generation, which is very hard to see. It really needs to be explained, and growers really need to understand what exactly they're getting into before they sign a contract. And the way you do that is learning all the details of how this market really works.
And you know, a lot of you guys have said it. This is like the Wild Wild West. Just to clarify that, it changes about every week.
Oh, yeah. You know, at the foundation of this is the science of soil carbon. And, you know, the science of soil carbon, what soil scientists thought they knew about soil carbon 10 years ago is almost completely untrue today. So it changes every day. The contracts change. You know, the public's expectation changes. And, you know, it's constantly moving and constantly evolving.
Caleb, you're with Agora. Ross, you're with Corteva. What are some of those key questions that it seems like every time you're talking to farmers, the same three or five questions come up?
Right. So, you know, I would say most common is definitely, you know, what practices qualify and what scenarios fit their farm and their operation to get qualified. And I'd say probably even the more popular than that was how long am I committed for and what am I locked into? And comparing and contrasting programs with them and who's got what to offer to help make sense with those farmers.
You know, and the other thing is that there's so many variables. Everybody's got different dirt and different practices. You know, I heard something recently is if you've been on one farm, you've been on one farm.
That's right. So, you know, variables is obviously the soil types that exist within that individual field, practices you've been doing in the past, and then some of that farm data we utilize to generate that goes into that model so we know how much carbon we extracted would be by far and away the biggest variables. And then obviously the weather we have every year too plays a part into that. And somebody said Mother Nature is always last at bat, and she determines and calls the shots.
Yeah. Caleb, you know, we were talking earlier, I'm pretty proud of my farmers around here because these guys have been rotating crops, but also no-till. They've been doing it for a long time. And one of the reasons is because we're in the Lake Erie watershed. So one of the cores of getting into the carbon credit program is having the data. Sure. These guys got data.
Oh, yeah. Data is obviously drives what we do. We not only use data to figure out how much carbon we think the grower will sequester, but we also use that data to figure out the impact, on an environmental scale. So the data is a critical component, and it's typically been the biggest impediment with a lot of carbon credit programs because there's a lot of data that is required up front. So your tillage data, your nitrogen application data, your planting dates, your harvest dates. These are all things that can be a bit laborious to go track down if you don't have access to them in digital spot. So, the data is a lot of data involved in this market, but there's a lot of data for a reason because the more data we have, the more accurately we can predict the effect of these practices that growers are doing, and we can more accurately pay them for what we think will happen.
Am I correct in assuming, and of course I'm a homer, love these guys around here and what they do and how they do it, seems like this is an ideal area for carbon credits because of the work that they've done conservation-wise and the data that they've collected.
Sure, and if you look at a map of the hotspots for carbon sequestration potential, you see the Corn Belt just glowing with potential, and that's one, because, you know, the soils here are highly productive. We have an ecosystem that's very conducive to sequester carbon. And with a lot of growers in this area who have been no-tilling and cover cropping for a while, well, their microbial populations will be very abundant and diverse. And that is highly conducive to carbon sequestration as well. The microbes control almost every process in the soil. They control the aggregation that protects the soil carbon molecules from being lost to the atmosphere. So, yes, the Corn Belt specifically is very well primed to participate in this market and be really good at it as well.
Ross, one of the things that everybody says when they start talking about carbon credits is read the contract and then read the contract. And then that small print of the book, you better call your lawyer. that alone is going to make people so doggone nervous. It's like, well, maybe I better not get into this. But what's the point about all that?
Yeah, so ultimately at the end of the day, I'm confident in Corteva and then Caleb's program too with Agora. They just want you as a grower to be comfortable. This is a new marketplace and seemingly a lot of people are learning about it. Caleb and I, we're just here to educate growers, and part of that is the contract language. Know exactly what you're getting into, what the expectations of you of the farmer are, and the long term, you know, what am I obligated to do on this piece of ground?
And there's so many different variables that go along with that, whether you own the ground or whether you're renting the ground, and does the owner get it or the guy who's farming the ground get the money from the carbon credit? One of the ones I wanted to ask you about was the duration of these contracts, because it seems like the 3 to 5 year contract, maybe even five more than three, but in somewhere in that range, probably a good length of a contract. Seems to me that the 10-year contract's a little bit scary, I think, maybe for a farmer going in when he doesn't know all the answers and how this is going to play out. What's your take on that?
Sure. So, I'm very proud of the Corteva stance we've taken, in our five-year agreement. And in part of that five-year agreement, the grower can opt out at any time. So, whether it's dropping a field out that didn't fit or benefit from the program, or if they just want to scale back and pull out of it altogether, we have baked in that flexibility. I hate to be a fearmonger in longer-term contracts, but if you see these practices as a benefit to your farm and you're in it for the long haul, some of those 10-year agreements are attractive for sure.
Caleb, finish up with you, the same question, about length of contracts, but then also if you can wrap in there conversation we had about Corteva with Ross, Agora, your company, Caleb. Because you're involved in actually creating carbon, that, you have an interest in buying some credits somewhere along the line, but both companies actually brokering as well. So speak to the length of the contract and then the form.
Sure. So our contract is one of the lengthier ones. It's a 10-year contract, and that's dictated by the registry that we use. The registry that we use operates internationally because, we have Agora in Brazil, we have Agora in Europe and India, so we have to use a registry that has basically more restrictions. So that's why ours is 10 years. And a bit of the idea of that is that a lot of companies who buy carbon credits want the carbon sequester to have a degree of permanence to it. Soil carbon is inherently tricky to increase in a measurable way because most soil carbon is very inert and it doesn't move. It's taken thousands of years to form, and a much smaller portion actually is able to be changed. So it oftentimes takes 3 to 4 or 5 years. And that five-year contract is really great, and I think that Corteva offers because, if the grower sees that he's sequestering carbon quicker than 5 years, well, that's a great benefit. So there's pros and cons to both of them. And, as far as brokering some of these carbon credits, well, our parent company, Yara, of course, has their own emissions to offset. So some will go towards that, and then some will go towards airline companies, big food industries. Anyone that emits carbon is going to be able to buy carbon credits from us, and I'm sure from Corteva as well.
All right, guys. Thanks a bunch. Very instructive. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
Podcasts by Federated Media.